the next talk is again describing something that many of us have gone through in the past. If you've used Django for a bit, or if you've started on a Django project that has been written some time ago, you may have run into the issue of reading the Django documentation and seeing some solution to your problems and starting to use that solution only to notice that you were accidentally browsing the incredibly versioned Django documentation at the latest version, but the project is some ancient version from like 2 years ago or something. And so this incredible solution won't work. Or you had to upgrade Django to the next version, and while Django helps you a lot by providing a very detailed changelog, this isn't exactly pleasant either. Christopher is going to tell us about a very old Django project and how they at Mozilla worked with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Alrighty. So, hey, I'm Chris. I'm here to talk about a very, very old Python project that originally was a PHP project, but let's start a little bit with an introduction. So I'm a software developer for almost 10 years now, and during that time I worked with many smaller and bigger companies, startups, fully grown companies, and have been working with many, many code bases, as probably a few other people here have as well. And notice that over time, while adding new features and implementing that new cool async stuff and other things can be very exciting and exhilarating, I was more torn towards old, ancient, big projects and had, funny enough, lots of fun to tackle them, touch them, work with them, create proper linting, create proper dependency management, continuous integration tests, and kind of trying to modernize those projects. One of the projects that I've been working on now since October 2015 at Mozilla is addons.mozilla.org, which is actually one of the oldest websites at Mozilla. And has been around for approximately 13 years now. Addons.mozilla.org has gone through a huge transition from a quickly hacked together PHP project to a now almost modern Django application, and will be heading towards Python 3 and Django 2, hopefully sometime in 2019 and maybe starting already in 2018. A few more numbers. Addons.mozilla.org serves approximately 3 million unique users per week. And the code base is something around 250,000 lines of code, counting Python, JavaScript, CSS, and SQL migrations. So let's start with a little history lesson. That is not complete at all, because that would take far too long. So in 2005, Mozilla.org, okay, that screenshot is not good. Anyhow, started with flat HTML files and sprinkled with PHP code and a few database queries here and there. So basically, just exactly like everyone told you, even back then, not to do it. It was a beta, though, so nobody cared. It has been redesigned over the years many, many times. So here's a new, fresh Mozilla design that kind of focused on the idea of promoting customization and customization in Firefox through Firefox add-ons. The PHP application grew more and more complex over time, and so it has been rewritten to be based on a PHP framework, Cake PHP version 1.1, which, as far as I researched, wasn't that mature back then, and only version 1.2 made it much easier. So As it happens in life, you settle on the wrong technology, or it was probably a very good decision back then, but it turns out later that it isn't. So you have to stick with it and have to work with it over time. Even using a more professional PHP web framework, the whole application got more and more complex over time. Now we're in 2009. The whole page is still using PHP, but after Django 1.0 got released in September 2008, a few people inside Mozilla started to promote Python and Django as the new technology to move forward and try to port many of our projects to Python and Django. It started with smaller websites and eventually got also towards projects like AMO. The transitioning time, the transitioning time from the PHP version to a Python and Django version took approximately 16 months, plus a little bit of transitioning time, going live, going back and forth, having lots of downtimes, and stuff like that. The whole 16 months were very stressful for the users, obviously, because the site was unreliable. They just wanted to search for an add-on, wanted to install it, wanted to be happy, but that didn't work. And there were bugs, maybe some translation errors, stuff like that. It was also very stressful for the QA team and management, obviously, because, well, issues arise, things take longer than you expect, because you can't just rewrite one code to the other and expect to just type it down and it works. You have to implement new features, you have to work with the data that you originally had in the database, and you have to migrate to the whole new system. So that is very error prone, and there's only a few ways that you can use to actually test that. And the best way to do that is manual testing, and that's very error prone as well. So in January 2010, plus a few more months transitioning time, the whole system got pushed into the live system. The big advantage of the rewrite to Django was that during that time, or to Python and Django during that time, lots of new unit tests got added, which simply didn't exist before. It didn't have 100% coverage, but it was close enough. And lots of new features did happen, and a few bug fixes and wrongly designed features in the PHP version were also corrected as much as possible. So almost 6 years before I joined Mozilla, and the whole porting process started, and this whole, or the new version, or new Python and Django version, was called Zamboni. Now, Canadians were involved. Canadians love their ice hockey, so that's Zamboni for everyone who doesn't know what that is. It's one of these ice machines that makes sure the ice is perfectly clean and, works like expected. So, between 2013 and 2015, a few more redesigns. On the left-hand side, you see the result, basically, after the website got ported to Python and Django. And over those 2 years, two or three redesigns happened, which is basically the one thing AMO is famous for. Every new year gets a new design, because why not? The whole site wasn't too special, actually, so it was primarily using Django. It was sprinkled with lots of raw SQL, as it was before, but it had some cool new things like Celery and RabbitMQ for asynchronous task management. And one problem right after that port, basically, and between 2013 and 2015, was that most of the development resources weren't working on AMO, so it kind of got paused during the development, or the development got paused on AMO, and it was left in that state that it was. It was rewritten from scratch, Maybe a few workarounds were there, and essentially many of the old entries and the old schema of the database back from the PHP world was still there. So as a side note, the page was built around, or the new page was built around the existing database. So that was cool, or not so much. That was because during that time, Firefox Marketplace happened, which is now not there or was discontinued. And many of the AMO resources were working on the Firefox Marketplace site and making sure that AMO was ready for Firefox OS and their apps. So that Firefox OS could use the marketplace to, or users of Firefox OS could use the marketplace to search for an app, install that app, just like everyone knows Android or iOS or any other mobile system works. And the interesting part here was that the Firefox Marketplace actually was derived from the AMO work. And initially, the same code base tried to be both Firefox Marketplace and AMO. So we had funny hacks, like there was a model from an add-on, and that add-on model changed depending on a setting, and it was either an app or an add-on, depending on the site that it was running on. Zamboni, on the other hand, so the system that's now running Firefox Marketplace, got cleaned up a lot and implemented a completely new front end based on React.js, adding lots and lots of new functionality and pushing more and more functionality towards Elasticsearch for performance reasons. We do that because our database clusters are very performant, can serve a lot of queries, but there is a huge amount of just static data on our site, and performance tests have shown that Elasticsearch can serve the data that we need much faster than our database cluster, which is also used for some statistical data, so the data isn't stored in the perfect way that we need it. Now all that changed again in 2015, and Olympia was born. Also again, a Zamboni, but a super cool, shiny new version of a Zamboni named Olympia. Around that time, a new team got formed, including myself, a few long-term AMO developers, marketplace developers, and we all got faced with a very difficult task to use the old addons.mozilla.org code and kind of use that code and implement or reanimate that code, basically, and had a huge list of features that we wanted to add, and also needed to make sure that that code will be living in the next few years. So the code back then was ancient. It was barely using Django 1.6, and every attempt to port to a newer Django version before 1.6 was kind of like installing 1.6, making sure the tests run, making sure the site run, and that's basically it. Push that to the live system as soon as possible, and deprecated features or things that will be eventually removed in Django largely weren't touched. So it was running Django 1.6, but many of the old and internal APIs were still used. We had essentially no unit tests for our JavaScript code, and the site was very JavaScript heavy. We have super awesome shiny install buttons that have 20 something different states. We have the whole add-on developer upload system that's running asynchronous JavaScript and accessing some APIs. And all that code was tested by hand manually, but didn't have any unit tests at all. So that was very error prone. Our CSS also was very massive. It had been through many, many redesigns over the time. And we had plain CSS, we had SCSS, we had some LESS code and some stylus code, just to name a few systems that we used and were actually running in production to style the page. So that was painful to see. We had to make a few hard decisions whether or not we want to rewrite the whole thing completely from scratch again, or if we want to improve incrementally. We essentially decided to improve incrementally the code and system over time, because rewriting from scratch for us was almost impossible. We were a very small team and unable to maintain two different versions at the same time, because you have to write the new version, you have to maintain the existing version, and then again you have to transition between both versions back and forth. Also, the existing version had a huge amount of features that many of us knew but never had seen since quite some time in the past. Collections, support for Firefox, support for Thunderbirds, SeaMonkey, themes, different types of add-ons, and still some legacy code when the code was used for both Firefox Marketplace and AMO. So a rewrite from scratch wasn't possible, and we decided to incrementally improve the whole system. Another factor was that we had thousands of unit tests that made the maintenance much easier, and at least got us some peaceful nights when we pushed some code live and our tests were running, or some of the existing tests didn't break. So over the time, we had been tasked to port the whole system to Django 1.8 during 2016, 2016 and 17. Removed old code where possible, restructured the whole repository, added proper dependency management, used much more of Travis, moved to GitHub for our issue tracking, involved the community much more, added more documentation, and also had to work towards the bigger goal of Mozilla to move towards the new add-on system, which is web extensions, which is using HTML5, JavaScript, and other technologies to build your extension or add-on in the browser. So that happened, and we also had to redesign, because we do that every year, and that was one of the bigger challenges back then, and we kind of ended up with one new file that was called restyle.less, which essentially took all the old styles, changed them back and forth so that the restyle looked good, but all that never ended up actually touching the existing styles that we had in the repository, because that would have been way too complex and error-prone, because we didn't properly know where they're used. So we ended up writing a completely new front-end from scratch based on React and as a single-page app, which is accessing the add-on server via a new REST API. Much more functionality got moved to Elasticsearch and APIs so that the front-end could use them. And we started with a small experiment during one of our all hands, very small experiment that used React as a single page app with server-side rendering, and implemented a very small amount of our page, which is the discovery pane that you see here when you go in your Firefox browser to the add-ons page or about add-ons and see recommendations of add-ons that you can install simply by swiping that button to the right-hand side. And that worked out nicely, was pushed to production after a few months of development, and kind of set the groundwork for future development of AMO and the front-end itself. So we rewrote the whole front-end from scratch as well. This work got released in November 2017, and this is how the page is looking, or was looking in December. The whole work got released right before Firefox 57 or Firefox Quantum got released, and had the luxury of focusing entirely on web extensions and themes and a few other pieces. And so essentially we did both with AMO. We incrementally improved the back end of our site and on server over time because we had lots of unit tests, but a very, very complex system to maintain, and had made the decision to completely rewrite our front end from scratch because we didn't have the luxury of unit tests and other maintenance helpers for the front end, and essentially needed something very clean and ended up writing something from scratch. So that now leaves us with a completely new system, and we're slowly deprecating features on the old side. For example, when we launch new replacement sites for apps like Thunderbird, SeaMonkey, for example, we can get rid of lots of new code, which will make the maintenance of our backend much, much easier and potentially allow us to move towards more recent Django versions and dependencies and implement new features much, much more quicker, or much, much quicker. So what did we learn? We are heavy users of feature flags and switches and are using Django Waffle for that. We try, or usually try, to develop new features that sit behind a Waffle flag so that we can push them to production once new things are finished, and we have a QA team that can test them on our development and staging systems, and have our UX and UI team look at the features that we implemented and have them give us the go when things look good again. So then we just have to flip the switch. So that makes it much easier to push new code, make sure it runs on your development staging systems, also push that code to production without putting it live, but also making sure that you didn't break any other systems that you rely on. And that makes it much easier to revert any broken deployments, obviously because you only have to flip back that switch. That can be, or is usually very easy, but depends on the feature and if you need any database migrations, for example. So if you have that, you need to take some special care. So another learning that we recently made, or almost a year now, or made since almost a year now, is third-party dependencies can be a huge pain. Have been always since we moved from Django 1.6 to 1.7 and 1.8. With a huge or very old code base as ours and using many, many internal functionality of Django, that was a huge pain. And the move from 1.6 to 1.8 alone cost us around 3 months of more or less full-time development. Also, while dependencies and semi-automatic upgrades via PyUp or Greenkeeper are awesome, and they usually work on the Anon server, we have often the problem on our front end that we get swamped with JavaScript dependency upgrades every now and then, and it's very hard to keep on top of them. So be aware of that. You don't have to be on the bleeding edge, but also make sure you're subscribe to the correct mailing lists and project bug trackers so that you can be aware of any security issues or bug fixes that are potentially impacting your site. Also, upgrading ancient dependencies can be very daunting and very time consuming, and it's often hard to find the right balance between doing the upgrade and knowing how long that'll take. Experience obviously helps, But what also helps is a very time-boxed work window and experimental branch that you just start up, give you like 2 hours or 3 hours, and work on that, see what breaks, and make a list of things that you think will happen or must happen so that the upgrade can happen. It also helps adding new dependencies to your continuous integration system while working on the system as well, so that you have both running at the same time. That makes sure, for example, if you're upgrading Django, that your code base can run, for example, both versions. And then essentially you only have to flip over to, for example, from Django 1.8 to 1.11 in your production system, and essentially can remove the old waffle flags or flags and code and workarounds from your 1.8 times. That's something we didn't do for our upgrade from 1.8 to 1.11, and that bit us a bit and yeah, cost us many, many months, or actually a year of work during that upgrade, because we ran into lots and lots of third-party dependencies that were broken, unmaintained, because we used many, or back in the days, many of the dependencies that we used were written by Mozilla, maintained by Mozilla, but over time the people changed positions and the projects are unmaintained now, and we had to upgrade them step by step or get rid of them. So that's very time consuming and daunting. So make sure the dependencies that you're using are up to date, are well maintained, or also make sure that you're on top of them and yeah, know how to handle them. And if they're unmaintained, make sure that you get rid of them or replace them or contribute to them on time before you run into any problems. I actually can't stress this enough. A QA team actually saves lives. While unit tests are awesome, automated Selenium UI tests are awesome as well, but having a QA team that manually tests your system and also makes sure that edge cases are covered, that the whole new features that you add are working as expected, is a huge time saver. Because often, if you're using, for example, mocks, if you're using mocks and if you use them too much, for example, you can end up not actually testing the right system. So having a QA team that has a clear list of things that need to be tested helps pushing your features, upgrades, dependency upgrades, and even migrations, makes all that work much, much easier. Also, explaining what you did and how to test it to someone else makes it much easier to reason over the code and the functionality that you implemented. Yeah, makes it reason about that, or makes yourself reason about that, and allows you to see any potential edge cases that you might have forgotten over time. Implement features incrementally and flip the switch to that feature once they're ready. It's not often as simple as that, but if you can do that, because it helps having that code in production sooner rather than later and catch any potential errors on time. Also, don't panic. Usually you're there for the long run and you have to make sure the project works for quite some time. If you see some code that really doesn't look that great, there usually was a reason for the code when it was written like that, and no one actually wanted to do something bad. Because, yeah, when you write your code, you use your best judgment and go forth with that. So that was my talk. Thanks a lot for listening. You can find me on GitHub, Twitter, and there's also the awesome Mozilla.org add-ons blog where you can find a lot more technical information about AMO and the stuff that we do. And if you have any questions, just find me after the talk. And thank you.